Today, I get an opportunity to visit with State Senator Jesse Green. We are getting ready for the legislative session. And, Senator, thanks for taking time visiting with us.
Hey, pleasure to be with you. Thanks for having me.
I know that you guys have been doing a lot of prep things. I call it prep work. you've had a number of legislative visits with different groups. I know you recently did the Ames Boone City Officials. They had the Chamber Legislative Review. And I know that I think the schools have been visiting with you about some of the things they're looking at, stuff like that. So a lot of prep work getting ready for this session. For you, I wanted to ask because a little different district for you this time.
Yeah, well, it's an exciting time of year every year before the session. You're right, the different groups reach out. Typically, this time of year, there's at least one or two meetings with various groups to let me know what's on their mind and what their concerns are. And so I take notes of each one and see what bills potentially that need to get drafted to address their concerns. And so it's now that this is my this is going to be my third session, it's a lot more feels a lot different than the last couple of years in approaching session. I feel like I've got my feet under me a little bit, and I'm really grateful that leadership has put their trust in me to chair local government. So that's going to be a new adventure for me, and we're going to be running some interesting bills through that. But you're right, the district is different. That's another change that's going to be happening. Previously, I served Greene County, Boone, Hamilton, and a quarter of Webster, and a little part of Story. After redistricting, I lost a quarter of Webster and Hamilton, but I picked up Guthrie and a quarter of Dallas. So the district is slightly different, but I'm grateful to that it wasn't that big of a change, and it's been a smooth transition.
Well, the biggest share of the people you have are both Boone and Greene County, and of course you worked with them in the past. Now that little sliver that goes in south of Ames into Story County, so a little bigger area there. Guthrie will be new, but a lot of the same kind of folks you've worked with on a lot of other things in the past. So,
you know, it's really interesting how every county has different issues that they face and different, just a different structure to each county. So, like with Guthrie, it's been an interesting transition into that. They have a very unique a county because of Lake Panorama, mm-hmm. and some of the issues that they face, and so it's been a growing experience for me to go through this transition and to get to know their needs.
You know, previously you had Representative Phil Thompson, of course, who's still here in Boone County, covering a big area there. But your new representative you're working with on the other side is Carter Nordholm. He's one of the youngest. I think he's one of the youngest in the House.
This is another fun transition because Carter Norman is the youngest legislator altogether in the legislature. I think he's 22 or 23, and then I'm the youngest Republican in the Senate. So that's kind of a fun little fact. And so there's a lot of young energy between Phil Thompson, Carter, and myself. But the benefit of having Phil is even though he's young, he's a veteran, considered a veteran in the legislature. And so I think we have a great team to serve the people of District 24.
Well, let's talk a little bit about I know one of the things that came up here the first of the year, normally most of the legislation that would have come out last time would have gone into effect like in July, but the tax bracket part went into effect here the first of the calendar year. And the bottle bill. Fine, yeah, the bottle bill. which I know you said there's probably going to be more work on it, but probably might not see that this year.
Yeah, so I think that's one of the – we've had so many great successes the last couple of years, but to me, getting the bottle bill reformed is reflective of how great of a atmosphere we have at the legislature. That is such a complicated issue that has been worked on for a long time, but because of various either special interests or political complexities, it can never get across the finish line. So I think it's some people laugh, but I'm dead serious that the bottle bill reform is one of the great successes of the last couple of years to show compromise and and the ability to work together with other people. But you're right. At the end of the day, people's pocketbooks, most people vote with their pocketbooks, and we're trying to give Iowans as much relief as possible in this inflationary time. From my perspective, the best way that we can battle inflation and help people is to reduce their tax burden. And you're starting to see that. And you see that in the Revenue Estimating Committee's numbers that they just came out with in December. We're going to have a 1.9% revenue decrease from a year ago. Sometimes that startles some people when they see that, but it was by design. We knew that with some of the tax relief that Iowans were going to be seeing, that we were going to be seeing this revenue decrease. So actually, our corporate tax rates, it looks like we will be able to drop those a little bit quicker than anticipated because of the growth in our Iowa's economy. And so some of the triggers and protections that we had in place, we're going to be able to let, maybe mm-hmm. push forward a little bit quicker. And I think that's exciting because when you look at our tax code and our tax setup, we have the second highest corporate tax rate in the nation, and that is unacceptable. So to get that down is going to be a great benefit to Iowans.
And I know, but when you start talk about doing that, it's at the same time. For every action you do, there is going to be a reaction. So something's going to happen somewhere else in there. Is it going to be, are we going to have to streamline or improve cost effectiveness on some of our other services and things like that?
So the reason we're able to see this tax relief for Iowans is because for quite a few years now, we have just restrained governments. And we haven't slashed spending. It's just a slow restraint. So typically, every year you'll see just nice, steady increases in different parts of the budget instead of big, huge increases, and so that's why we've been able to accomplish this, and it just shows that conservative budgeting practices work, and we will continue to go down that path and make sure that the services that taxpayers are receiving are funded predictably, reliably, and steadily going forward.
Well, session gets ready Monday morning. We know that. The week, I say you get a lot of pomp and circumstance, but you've got the governor doing the condition of the state address. That's going to be streamed on Tuesday evening. And then you've got the Chief Justice doing the judiciary. And then the National Guard, Ben Corral, will be doing the condition of the guard address. Again, get a lot of things happening going through there. It's a busy week, getting a lot of activities and things taken care of, but a lot of organizational. Are you pretty well all set on how things are coming together there? And I know that you don't get a lot of business done right away, but you start to get set up for it.
Yeah, well, so I've got one of the first clerk that I had a couple years ago. She's going to be coming back to help me being on chairing a committee. I wanted to make sure I had a veteran helping me with that, and so I'm pleased to have her. And so we've been working on getting bills ready to file next week as soon as we get into session. And you're right, it is a lot of pomp and circumstance. The governor's inaugural ball will be next week on Friday. I can't wait to go see what that's like. But the highlight of every session for me, one of the highlights, is the governor's condition of the state speech, and which is on Tuesday night, and I think the room is just going to be so full of energy. This is the largest Republican majority trifecta that we have seen since 1972, and the governor just come off this huge victory, 19-point victory. We've gained so many seats, and so I can't wait to see her energy and what she is going to lay out for an agenda for this year, and so that's going to be definitely one of the highlights next week.
Well, we know some of the things that she's going to talk about, but the rest of it's going to be, it'll be interesting to see what other things she puts together there. But school choice, we know, is going to be one of her leads. That's that, and you've been a supporter of that.
Yeah, so I mean, it's I'd have to say that was probably the number one issue that drove me to run for office, because I feel like that's how I've been shaped. I went to public school, private school, a lot of my family homeschools. I go to a church that has many, many homeschool families, and so that issue has always been near and dear to me. And so you're right that basically I look at the election as a mandate on that issue. We all knew that that was the number one holdup the last couple sessions. That was the number one wedge issue between the House and the Senate. And with redistricting and some of the primaries that happened, it was the pro-school choice candidates that ended up coming up on top of those. So all eyes are going to be on the governor as to what proposal she's going to bring forth. Every time I see her or one of her staffers, I just encourage them to be the boldest people in the room, continue to be that bold leader. And I hope that's reflective in her proposal on school choice here within the next couple of weeks. So I expect that to be the first bill that we pass out. Historically, we have to come out with our state supplemental aid number for public schools within the first 30 days. So education is going to be front and center as soon as the session gets started.
I know you did get a chance to meet with some of the legislative groups, some of the education people, groups like that. Were they talking more? Because one of the things over the last couple of years I saw, we need more help in the area of mental health, that sort of thing. Are we still seeing that trend?
Yeah, from my vantage point, I've seen schools handle this issue a little bit differently. I think Boone and Ogden, for example, hired someone specifically that was going to be their number one thing that they try to help the students in those particular schools with, is with some of the mental health needs. And I'm wondering if you're going to start seeing more and more of that. And I'm not on the education committee, so I'm not sure what some of the specifics look like with that. But that's going to be my tone going forward, is how can we help provide maybe it's operational sharing positions for mental health professionals within the schools. But that is certainly the number one need that's happening. And it's sad that I think the mental health problems that we see within the state, I think the majority of it is with our youth. And we have to do everything possible to give them the support that they need.
Okay. There's a couple other things. I know one that you kind of are in the middle of this, but only because we know it's in the area, and that's going to be the issues of eminent domain. And again, the carbon pipelines, that's the big thing that's drawing the attention now. But there are other eminent domain issues out there, too.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So in District 24, in our district, we have two pipelines that are coming through. And so that makes it very unique from my perspective in the legislature. I do receive more calls than other legislators because of that fact. And so I do feel I have to be outspoken on this issue. When you look at the Iowa Utilities Board and what they have the direction that we have given them within the Iowa Code, there's just so much vagueness. And I think because of that vagueness, you see this frustration come up within the citizens of Iowa. And I think number one, and what I think can politically pass, is we need to establish a threshold level. If, for example, if two-thirds of the land is voluntarily signed up for a project, I think it's at that point that eminent domain can even be considered. I think right now for the Summit Pipeline, I believe it's like 55% of the land has been signed up for projects. So so the process is playing out. They are paying very well, and landowners are signing up for this project, but there's still this fear that, is it too soon for eminent domain to be considered? And so I hope we as a legislature will at least agree that we need to establish that threshold for the Iowa Utilities Board to use as guidance going forward. But you're going to see a lot of different bills come out of the Senate. I think one of my colleagues has five bills personally that he is filing to talk about different issues, like providing what is a public utility.
Mm-hmm.
I think that needs to be clarified within code as well. Another colleague of mine is passionate about, should private companies be able to utilize eminent domain? I think all these feelings and all these fears are are very well grounded and need to be fleshed out within the legislative process. But so you're right, that issue is going to be front and center.
Well, I know there's going to be a lot of debate on property taxes. I know that's come up. The one thing I wonder is, property taxes, because I know that we have Boone County has one of the lower rates in the state, at least at the county level. Yet you have some of the schools that have some of the higher rates in the state just because of their proximity, the number of students they have and things like that. So, again, I've watched over a number of years property tax issues coming up for the legislature. Not an easy task to make changes in that. It's a very complex system.
Yeah, and I look forward. Phil Thompson, I think, has a great bill that he's going to be putting forth in the House. And there's a lot of different conversations surrounding this, but one thing's for sure is Iowa ranks 40th in the nation when it comes to property tax, and to me that's unacceptable. That means that something is not quite right with that. I don't like seeing that. When you go door knocking in different parts of the state, we just came off an election where I was door knocking in Council Bluffs, north of Iowa City, west of Des Moines, and around Mason City, and the conversation always comes up. Is about the property tax increases. And so that's what's driving this conversation. Now, going forward, elections matter. And number one, if people have issues with their property taxes, they need to be talking to their local officials. But one thing I think needs address, and that is the confusion that is around what drives our property tax increases. And a lot of times I think voters feel like the local officials will blame the assessor, and then the assessor will say, well, it's not my fault. My job is just to assess the property, which he's right. And then he points the finger back at the local official. And then at the end of the day, the taxpayer is sitting back and being like, well, who keeps taking advantage of my property taxes?
Bought that house at that big price.
Yeah. And so I think at the end of the day, transparency and accountability and communication is what solves almost all problems within government. And so I just hope that we can come up with some reforms that helps local governments communicate better with the taxpayer on what's happening with their tax dollars. But number one thing's for sure, what increases taxes? It's increasing spending. And so at the end of the day, the responsibility does come down to that. Who is spending our dollars and why are they spending more and more every year?
Probably because inflation.
Yep. And so it's a very complicated and complex issue.
And the way they do the rollback. And again, it's just hard for people to, they see what the valuations come out from the assessor, which has to be done mathematically. I mean, it's, you take, these are the changes we're seeing, the increased sales that we've had. And now we're starting to see some of that come back. That's one of those I might have to visit with the assessor and talk a little bit about. Now we're seeing some of those prices starting to come back a little bit. What does that do to valuations the next time they have to calculate those? So,
Yeah.
There's a lot of working parts in there. I said someone a lot smarter than me helped put that together a long time ago, and it's not easy. And again, I've watched over the years different legislative sessions. We want to do something with property taxes, but getting into it, that, like you said, being able to understand it is probably one of the biggest challenges.
When I first came in, it's like, well, my gut instinct was to say, well, let's just have a revenue cap. Like property taxes can't increase more than, let's say, 2 or 3% a year. It sounds good on the surface, but then you start to dig into it. There's some local governments that have been very conservative with their spending. And so if you institute a 2% cap right now, you're kind of hamstringing some of the entities that have been very responsible and not giving them the same leeway as those that have maybe been less responsible. So again, it's really complicated. That's why I'm really excited for Representative Thompson. I think he's got a good bill. He's one of the smartest legislators in the House, And I think we're very fortunate to have somebody like him in the House to drive that issue.
Well, I know you've got other things that are coming up. I'm going to get out of your way and stuff. But again, we'll get the session started next week. We got a lot of activities, a lot of things going on. I look forward to continuing to visit with you throughout the session, keeping folks updated on what's been going on. If they want to get a hold of you when you're down there at the legislature, what's a good way to go about that?
Well, so if you come up to the rotunda at the Capitol, you can always put in a slip, and either myself or my clerk will receive that slip, and I would love to come out and visit with you. The last couple of years, I think there's only been maybe two occasions where somebody put in a slip and I wasn't available at the time. And so that's one way. Another way is to give me a phone call. My number is 515-351-9761, and schedule a private tour of the Capitol with me, and go have supper, whatever you want. And that is my favorite thing to do during session, is to talk with constituents.
All righty. State Senator Jesse Green, our guest on our program today. Jesse, thanks for visiting with us. Have safe trips back and forth to the legislature, and we'll look forward to visiting with you again next time.
Thank you. Always a pleasure. Take care.